All right, everybody, get ready for a deep dive. Today, we're going headfirst into a real legal showdown, Nebraska Press Assen v. Stewart. You know, freedom of the press versus the right to a fair trial, First Amendment, Sixth Amendment.
Yeah, classic. And a case that still matters so much today, especially when you think about, like, all the media attention on huge trials, like we saw with Trump or Ghislaine Maxwell.
Absolutely.
Nebraska Press Assen get cited all the time. Like, how much can the press report before a trial even starts?
To really get what's at stake here, though, we need to go back. 1975. Small town in Nebraska.
Yeah.
Sutherland. Population 850. And then this horrible crime happens. Six members of the Kelly family brutally murdered. The suspect, Erwin Charles Semantz, he confesses. And all of a sudden, this tiny town is just flooded with reporters.
Oh, wow. It must have been so intense. And, you know, it's really interesting, actually. Both the prosecution and the defense, they both wanted to gag the press. They were worried that all this media attention, this circus, would make it impossible for Semantz to get a fair trial.
Yeah, I can see how that would be a concern. So what exactly did this gag order try to stop?
Well, the county court, they first tried to issue this really sweeping order, basically blocking any reporting at all. But the Nebraska Supreme Court, they narrowed it down. But even then, the modified order, it still said the press couldn't report some major things, like Simon's confession was off limits, no reporting on the medical testimony about the sexual assault either, and they couldn't even say who the victims were.
Wow. That's a lot of information to keep quiet.
Yeah.
So how did this small town case get all the way to the Supreme Court?
So the Nebraska Press Association, they represented a bunch of news outlets, and they said, hey, this gag order, it violates the First Amendment, our freedom of the press. They said the court was basically censoring them, like prior restraint.
Right? Okay, prior restraint. For those of us who aren't constitutional law experts, can you break that down a bit?
Yeah.
What is prior restraint and why is it such a big deal?
Prior restraint, well, it's when the government says, hey, you can't publish that or don't say that before it's even out there. And the Supreme Court, they've always said that this is like the worst kind of violation of the First Amendment. Like, imagine someone looking over your shoulder, censoring every word before you can even share it.
Yikes. I see why the press was so upset. It sounds like prior restraint, it just totally shuts down the conversation. So what did the Supreme Court do?
They sided with the press. In a unanimous decision, they said, nope, this gag order is not okay. They basically said that the Nebraska courts hadn't proven that this was really, really necessary.
So what would the Nebraska courts have to prove to silence the press like that?
They'd have to prove a few things. One, that the publicity was so intense and biased that a fair trial was basically impossible.
Right.
Two, that nothing else would work, like moving the trial or being super careful about picking the jury. And three, that the gag order would actually work, like it would actually prevent harm.
So basically, they'd have to prove that there was absolutely no other way to have a fair trial except by completely silencing the press.
Pretty much. And the Supreme Court was like, you haven't proven that. Chief Justice Berger, he wrote the main opinion, and he was very clear about how dangerous prior restraint is.
I bet. What did he say?
He used this analogy. He said, and I'm quoting here, prior restraint freezes speech. Post-publication penalties merely chill it.
Wow, that's powerful. What's the difference, though, between freezing and chilling speech?
Well, he's saying prior restraint, it's like completely stopping someone from speaking or publishing. Post-publication penalties, it's more like they might make you think twice, but they don't shut you down entirely.
Okay, so the court saw prior restraint as way more serious. Makes sense. But didn't you say that even though they all agreed to strike down this gag order, the justices had some pretty different opinions about, like, how far First Amendment rights should go?
Exactly. And those are the concurring opinions. That's where it gets really juicy. We see these justices, like, really wrestling with the whole thing, you know, how to balance free press and a fair trial.
Okay, now I'm intrigued. Let's hear about it.
Well, so you've got Justice Brennan. He was basically like, no prior restraint, ever, period.
No exceptions. He sounds like a First Amendment absolutist.
Pretty much. He thought, just focus on things like picking the jury carefully, giving them really good instructions, maybe moving the trial. But silencing the press? Nope.
Okay, so no silencing the press for Brennan. What about the others?
Well, Justice Powell, he was a bit more in the middle. Like, he didn't completely rule out prior restraint, but he set a super high bar for when it would be okay.
Hmm. I'm sensing a test coming on.
Yeah, there's the famous three-prong test, a clear and present danger to the fairness of the trial, direct evidence that the publicity was causing the problem, and proof that nothing else would work.
So basically, Powell was saying that maybe in some really extreme cases, prior restraint could be okay.
Yeah.
But not just any case.
Right. And then there was Justice White. He agreed that this particular gag order was wrong, but he didn't want to make any big sweeping statement about prior restraint in general.
Hmm. So he was keeping his options open, just in case.
Yeah, he was like, this one's no good, but I'm not saying it could never happen. And then Justice Stevens, he also agreed with the majority, but he brought up this really interesting question. What if the press got the information illegally?
Well, that's a whole other issue.
Right. He didn't really answer it in this case, but it came up later. In another case, Bartnicki v. Vopper, the Supreme Court actually addressed that. Illegally obtained info, what can the press do with it?
Wow. Okay, adding that to my reading list. It seems like Nebraska press arson. Even though everyone agreed, it really got people thinking about all these complicated questions about the limits of press freedom.
It did, and that's what makes it such an important case. It didn't answer all the questions, but it set the stage for how we think about these issues, this balance between free press and a fair trial.
So we've talked about how Nebraska press ass kind of shut down the idea of prior restraint in this case, but how did the court actually get there? What convinced them?
Well, if we look closer at what Chief Justice Berger wrote, his majority opinion, we can see how he built his argument. One of the first things he did was talk about history. He pointed out how prior restraint has always been a problem in American law, like going all the way back to Blackstone.
Blackstone, like the Blackstone.
Yeah.
From Blackstone's commentaries?
Yeah. He called it the most dangerous way to attack press freedom. Berger was really grounding his argument in, like, centuries of legal thought.
Okay, so there's this history of being against prior restraint.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing it's more than just tradition, right?
Oh, definitely. Berger explained why it's so bad. He said it turns things upside down. Like, instead of assuming that speech is free unless there's a really good reason to restrict it, prior restraint does the opposite. It says speech should be suppressed unless it can prove it's okay.
Wow, that's a big difference. It's like ideas are guilty until proven innocent.
Exactly. And that's why Berger saw prior restraint as such a threat. It makes everyone nervous, makes them wonder if what they're saying could be censored next.
I'm getting nervous just thinking about it. So Berger's saying prior restraint is bad historically and because of how it works. But how did he apply that to this case in Nebraska?
Well, he said the Nebraska courts went too far too fast. They jumped right to a gag order without really thinking about other ways to make sure the trial was fair.
Like what other options did they have?
Berger said they could have moved the trial to a place where people hadn't heard so much about the case. Or they could have brought in jurors from a different county.
Okay.
Or they could have been really picky during jury selection, asked lots of questions to make sure the jurors could be fair.
So he was saying there are other ways to protect the defendant's rights without silencing the press.
Exactly. And he said this gag order was way too broad. It wasn't aimed at a specific problem.
Okay. So Berger's arguing against the gag order in a few ways. The history, the fact that there were less drastic options, and just how broad it was.
Right. And there's one more thing. Berger was worried about setting a bad example. He thought if they allowed this gag order, it would open the door for more gag orders in other cases. Like, it could hurt press freedom everywhere.
So they were thinking about the big picture, the impact on the whole country.
Yes. They knew this wasn't just about Simmons and his trial. It was about protecting freedom of the press.
So we've got the majority opinion. You mentioned the concurring opinions, too, where things get interesting. Can you tell us more about those?
Of course. Like we said, all nine justices agreed that this gag order was no good. But their concurring opinions, they show how each justice was thinking about this tough issue, how to balance free press and fair trial.
Okay, let's hear it. What were they saying?
Well, Justice Brennan, he was all about absolute press freedom. No prior restraint ever.
Wow. No matter what.
No matter what. He thought courts should use other ways to make sure trials are fair, like we talked about, but never by silencing the press.
That's a strong stance.
Yeah.
What about the other justices?
Well, we talked about Justice Powell. He had that three-pronged test for when prior restraint might be okay, but he set the bar really high.
Right. So he wasn't making it easy to justify gagging the press.
Exactly. And then Justice White, he agreed this gag order was wrong, but he didn't want to say anything definite about prior restraint in general.
So he was being cautious, maybe thinking there might be some unusual situation where it would be okay.
Yeah, something like that. And it's interesting because even Justice Stevens, who also agreed with the majority, he brought up this thought-provoking question. What if the press got their information illegally?
Oh, that's tricky.
Right. He didn't answer it here, but it came up later In another case, Bartnicki v. Vauper, the Supreme Court had to decide what the press can do with information they got illegally.
Okay, I'll have to look into that case. So Nebraska press ass. It seems like even though they all agreed, it really started a lot of discussion about press freedom.
It definitely did. And that's why it's such a key case.
Yeah.
It set up how we think about this balance between a free press and a fair trial.
So we've talked about the justices' opinions, but it's been almost 50 years since this case. How has Nebraska press assin affected things today?
It's had a huge impact. It really made it clear that you can't just silence the press. It's really hard to get a gag order. And even when you do, it's usually for something very specific.
So this isn't just some theory. It actually matters in real life for lawyers, judges, and journalists.
Absolutely. And what's amazing is that it's still relevant, even though the media has changed so much. We're not just talking about newspapers and TV news anymore. We have social media, where information spreads like crazy.
It makes me wonder how the court would have decided this case if they were dealing with Twitter and TikTok, not just printing presses.
You know, that's a great question. Some people think that because information spreads so fast online, maybe there should be some exceptions to the rule against prior restraint, at least in extreme cases.
So like updating Nebraska press ass
yeah.
for the digital age.
Right. But so far, the Supreme Court hasn't wanted to weaken Nebraska press ass. They keep saying its basic principles are still important, even with the internet.
So they're sticking to their guns, even though the way we get news has changed so much.
It seems like it. They understand that even though the internet can be messy, it's also a powerful tool for spreading information and holding powerful people accountable.
So why does all this matter to us today? This case is from almost 50 years ago. Why should we care?
That's the point, isn't it? Nebraska press assin. It's not just about that one gag order in Nebraska. It's about freedom of the press, which is super important for a democracy. It means the press can keep an eye on those in power, and that helps make sure things are fair.
That makes sense. And it's something we need to remember no matter what year it is.
Exactly. Cases like this remind us that these freedoms, they're not just ideas. They affect us in real life. They shape how we get information, how the legal system works, how society functions.
It's been a fascinating look at this case. Thanks for helping us understand it.
It's been my pleasure. It might seem like UB news, but there's a lot we can still learn from these cases.
And that's what we're all about, making these important legal cases interesting and understandable for everyone.
So we've covered a lot of ground on Nebraska Press House. The majority opinion, those concurring opinions, but were there any dissenting voices, any justices who actually thought that gag order was the right move?
That's a good point to bring up. It's important to remember there weren't any totally dissenting opinions in Nebraska Press, Essen v. Stewart.
Yeah.
Like all nine justices, they agreed that the Nebraska courts went too far with that gag order.
Oh, okay.
But as we talked about, the concurring opinions show that they had some different ideas about how far the protection against prior restraint should go. So even though there wasn't a formal dissent, there was definitely some back and forth about how to balance free press with a fair trial.
Gotcha. So they all agreed on the outcome, but maybe not on exactly how they got there.
Yeah, exactly. And those different viewpoints, they're really helpful. They give us more ways to think about this complicated issue. Okay, that makes sense. So how has Nebraska press assin held up over time? It was decided a while ago. Is it still relevant?
Absolutely. Nebraska press assin, it's been huge. It comes up all the time in cases about pretrial publicity and the First Amendment. And generally, courts have stuck to the main idea that you can't just stop the press from publishing stuff.
Right.
But as we've been talking about, things change, right? Especially with the internet and social media. It's a whole new world compared to when this case was decided.
Yeah, for sure. It's like a constant stream of information now. Have there been any challenges to Nebraska press assin? Like, have its ideas been tested in the digital age?
Well, the internet and social media, they definitely add some new twists. I mean, information spreads so fast online.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible to control what people are saying, especially with high-profile cases. It's like a wildfire.
I bet that makes things tough for lawyers and judges who are trying to make sure a trial is fair.
Absolutely. And because of that, some legal experts, they're saying that Nebraska press assin, maybe it needs a little update. You know, for the 21st century.
I can see that.
They say that with the internet, maybe there should be some really real...
That makes sense. So bringing it back to us, why should we care about this case from so long ago?
Well, Nebraska Press Assin v. Stewart, it's not just about one gag order in one small town. It's about protecting the freedom of the press. It's a fundamental right.
Right.
It means having a press that can report freely and independently. And that's crucial if we want to have a society where people in power can be held accountable and where justice can be served.
And that's definitely something worth thinking about.
Absolutely. And cases like this one, they remind us that these rights, they're not just abstract ideas. They really do matter in our lives. They affect how we get information, how the legal system works, how our society functions.
Well, this has been a really fascinating deep dive. Thanks for taking the time to explain this case and help us understand why it's still so important today.
My pleasure. It might seem like we're talking about ancient history sometimes, but these cases, they have so much to teach us.
That's what the deep dive is all about, exploring those key legal cases and making them interesting and understandable for everyone. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time for another deep dive into the world of law and justice.